Hi everyone, this is Accents on WUKY. This episode has been brought to you by Kentucky Humanities and the Kentucky Book Festival. I'm the host, Katerina Stoykova, and my guest today is poet Douglas Self. Hi Doug, welcome to Accents.
Hi Katerina, it's good to be here and thanks for having me.
You are the author of the recently published Blast Radius. In one sentence, to me, this is a book about PTSD and its aftermath. Do you agree? What do you think?
Yeah, that is a concise way of putting it, but one word, it's about chaos. Internal and external chaos.
Well, you managed to say it even more succinctly. Speak to us about this book. We want to learn.
Well, one, I never ever thought I would be a poet. So this book was never even thought of while I was in Iraq or even quite a few years after Iraq. I just kind of doodled in just notebooks here and there, just strewn about through my apartment. But then when I got into poetry here in Lexington, started working with poetry mentors and stuff, every once in a while, military poems would come out, but this book is weird. You know, I was able to spend time in the gauntlet, the poetry gauntlet, through Chris McCurry before, did it before it was attached to the Carnegie Center, and I remember Tina Parker was part of that poetry gauntlet, and she was working on Lock Her Up at that time and doing a ton of research, and just really, it was kind of cool to see behind the scenes of someone doing a lot of research for a book. This book is completely opposite of that because I was living this book at that time, and when I was doing the poetry gauntlet, that is when a lot of these poems came out, in a hotel room, away from home, from work, for about a month. Yeah, I mean, it was a dark time. So this book, it's one of those living books that the poet is experiencing at that moment.
That helps us feel the poems very intimate.
So they weren't poems. I mean, they were poems to me when I wrote them. But my body and my mind were just in flux, in chaos, like in a constant state of chaos. And, you know, realized over time, you know, that depression and those suicidal ideations and things, those are alarms going off saying, hey, there's something wrong. Maybe you should get some help. But I didn't know what was wrong. And these poems were like, oh, maybe I should go to the VA and get some help. So these poems were, that's why I got poet tattooed on my fingers, because I feel like they saved my life.
And the book itself starts with the first visit to the therapist, and it's punctuated. The poems are structured in such a way that they are punctuated by questions that a therapist asks, right?
Yes.
Talk to us about the organization of the book.
So that's funny. That poem is actually not about the therapist I work with. I worked with in 2018 and beyond. It's actually a therapist I met at the VA in 2011 here in Lexington, when I wasn't really ready to get any help. I was looking for a reason. So any reason to just run away and not deal with it. But so originally I had it structured the pre-deployment, deployment, post-deployment, and then, but I knew I wanted to, because every time you do a VA appointment, a therapist, you have to answer these questionnaires. And not every section, that's not all the questions you have to answer when, you know, it's, they're really just trying to get a baseline of how you're doing before that appointment, you know. So I personally had never seen a collection of poetry or books structured that way. And actually, I thought about it, but I didn't do it. And the first manuscript I sent you had the other sectioning, and you mentioned it. It's like, is there another way that you know, try looking at how you really want to structure it, if there's another way that might work.
Oh, structure is super important.
Yes.
About, it's a matter of storytelling. Mm. And you made a book about healing in a way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that structure, it was, so when you said that, like, that really just hit me. It's like, you know how you want to structure it. Stop being lazy and do it. Like, but it is about healing, and first time being in the publishing process, I felt very new at the whole thing. So, I mean, I wasn't really seeing the grand scope of it. But being on the production schedule and having time to really just start to notice that, like, okay, this book's not about you anymore. It already helped you. Like, it already helped me while I was writing it and inspiring me to go get help at the VA, at the VA here in Lexington. And there's no poem of hope in this book at that time, in that manuscript. Like, you know, I can't, realizing, you know, if you really want this to help others that are going through that, then and heal and give them, and inspire them to seek out healing, then definitely there needs to be that a final message of hope.
What has the reception been? Do you have feedback, comments from anyone?
Oh, I was overwhelmed, actually. Not in an exhausting way, just I was not expecting. I mean, I knew some family and friends once the announcement came out on Facebook and other social media platforms. I knew there would be a little bit of response from people saying, hey, good job, stuff like that. But, you know, just seeing the, like, friends that have read it and then posting about it and the kind words, and also the biggest one is my fellow Iraq veterans, but any military veterans, you know, really, like, my buddy's mom texted him, she bought a copy, and he texted me, he's like, dude, her only response, the text response I got was Jesus with an exclamation point, like, because he doesn't really talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
And so he was like, he used that this book as, this is an accurate representation of what it feels like. So that right there was, I think that one was probably the most just rewarding, like, you know, just hearing it from somebody that, I mean, I served with him in Iraq, so he, you know, and for, you know, we went through the day to day, even though we weren't with each other every day, you know, so to have that kind of response from somebody that was there with me, you know, to say this represents how I felt too, that's, I don't think I could get a better.
That is true.
Yeah.
Was it difficult to release the poems to be published?
Not really. Did I ever have the thought of, wow, what are people going to think after reading this? You know, what will some people think? Yeah, but that it really was fleeting. Like, it just, I thought it and the thought was gone, because it really, I mean, the love of poetry, that, I mean, just writing a poem in 2012 and then meeting you and the community, the poet, not just the poetry community here in Kentucky and Lexington, but just the writing community in general, being around so many great poets and all of them are publishing, and deservedly so, you know, so to me it was just like, that's what I want to do. Like, that's one thing I want to do in my life, and so I really wasn't too worried at that point.
You know, people who listen to this podcast in some regularities have heard me say that several times, that poetry is a matter of life and death.
You know what? There's probably a time I would have disagreed. I've been like, it's just poetry. Like, it's not. It's almost hard to describe and put into words what truly, how visceral art can save us and help us. I mean, I'm a big fan of heavy metal music, which you've known for years, and I've been listening to it for decades, and I kind of take pride in this book being very direct and vulnerable and not sugarcoating anything. So yes, I agree now that poetry is life and death in some sort. It can be fun, and sometimes I forget that it can be fun, and sometimes I just write practice poems to have fun with words, because it is fun, language is fun. But there are other times like this when, I mean, seriously, well, you know, and I'll reiterate it again, that's why I got poet tattooed on my knuckles, because these poems saved my life.
And I have a question about that tattoo, and you mentioned it twice already. I was going to wait till the end to out you about it, but yeah. Please describe that tattoo and tell us more about how you got it. I have a tattoo envy.
Yeah, that's just a standalone. It's just, you know, the regular letters of poet across my right knuckles. But, the half sleeve that I have on my lower right arm is a combination of tattoos. It's just old ancient Norse symbols and a Celtic cross and then some dragon scales. I like older ancient symbols, but also, like, I like the, it's kind of like the warrior style, but also, like, throwing poet on the knuckles kind of throws people off, especially being, you know, I started off my military career in the Marine Corps active duty, then moved to the Army Reserves, and then served in Iraq. They don't usually expect us military to be poets. That's one of the few things in this day and age. It's a rare combination. So I do hope to get the full sleeve finished and be a more spiritual and enlightened half of the dark half.
Could you please read us several poems?
Oh, man, I don't even know where to start. All right, we'll start with the one on the accent site. This is Explosions Are My Dreams. The conviviality I strive for because I live lamenting the next breath that lies in wait for me to scream. Out, in, and out, the efficiency of the power plant that is my body denies my attempts at suffocation. I cannot wait to sleep, to forget about waking up. Up, the blast radius blows up in a ring of earthly debris and death, raising me above all, the glorious good night. There are some inappropriate poems in here too, which is, here's one. I wondered what it would be like to kill, to hover over their body, grimly, with such power and magnificence. Adore me, because I am your life now. My favorite things. Sitting at work doing nothing, almost a sexual pleasure. Sitting at home doing nothing, wishing I was at work, doing nothing. An unpleasantness arrives. Listening to the wife tell me all the things that I don't do right. Are you really going to eat that? You never want to have sex. Why are you making that sandwich that way? Wouldn't it make it more sense to do it my way? You won't talk to me. What do you mean I always tell you what you're doing wrong? I'm sorry you feel that way. What she doesn't realize is that my eyelids must be armored because they're too heavy to lift in the morning, and that my side of the bed is a quicksand lover because I never want to get up. For tomorrow is here, today, excruciatingly here, waiting for me as if I were prey. This one is Dual Diagnosis. They say I'm different, that I'm always drunk. They don't understand. I want to leave. I want to go home, back to Iraq, where PTSD doesn't show. This one's called Coping. Sweaty forehead, empty stomach except for Percocet and beer pangs almost double me over on the bar stool. Order another bottle of Miller Lite and a shot of Black House. Friends and I sat around watching videos of people beating the shit out of each other before coming to the bar. I want to fight right now, but the energy humming through me. I won't break it. I can't. I'm on my way to oblivion, but I'm not there yet. Dirty blonde walks by. She's checking you out hard. What are you going to do about that? Nothing. Absolutely nothing. I'm not here for that tonight. Stomach lining screams, bending me over in a figurative half because I must maintain composure. Another bottle of beer and another shot, followed by claps on the back. It's good to see you, brother. Don't worry about it. I got this round. Now come on, let's go out back and smoke this thing up. Yeah, sure, I'll be right back. I just gotta piss. Man, we're glad you're home, safe and sound. Thanks, now hand me my beer. I need to wash another pill down.
Who do you hope reads this book?
I guess anybody, but I mean, but the main target of this audience, you know, is military veterans who have experienced the same or are experiencing the same life with PTSD and combat PTSD, but also I think there's all kinds of PTSD in this world. So I think a lot of people could, that have had some kind of trauma in their life, probably could get something out of it. But I know right now I'm just trying to target, trying to get it into the hands of the other military combat veterans out there.
Do you continue to write on the same topic now that the book is out?
I have not. It's funny though, like just talking to some friends, you know, there was a friend of mine, Don Airy, man, I just wanted to kind of give him a tribute shout out. He passed away and just right after the book came out. And this is, he was one of my best friends in Iraq, and his face popped in my head once I knew that, you know, once you and I had communicated that the book was, you know, it's going to be out in the next couple months. I really wanted to get it into his hands because I knew he was hurting. And, you know, so I did a little bit of writing on that when I went to his funeral, because, I mean, that just brought up everything. Like, cause even while I was writing this book, I, like, stayed away from my Iraq pictures. But once the book came out and once Don passed, I couldn't avoid it all anymore. I had to, like, just, so I got to see some friends that I served with, and, you know, we said our goodbyes to a brother. I wrote about that, but other than that, I haven't written too much. I've been writing screenplays more than anything lately.
Is going into the military a calling?
I think so. I mean, I think a lot of times in life you see, you know, the families where the father or the mother has served in the military, usually a child does, no different than if somebody plays sports or things of that nature or into poetry. So my father served in the Marine Corps during Vietnam, and my mom's dad, my grampy Ali, was a sailor in World War II.
What did military service teach you that you wouldn't have learned any other way?
I think that the biggest thing that I learned in the Marine Corps is accomplishing the mission, really. Just getting the job done regardless of what you think of the people you're working with, because not everybody likes each other. And now that has nothing to do with what our job is. Like, we have this goal. It needs to be completed. So I think really just trying to set aside personal beliefs sometimes and personalities, and just say, okay, well, what do we need to do? Like, and this is what we need to get done. And you know, as an immature 18-year-old going in there, I didn't have that. You know, I was very sensitive and not able to, you know, set aside those feelings. So I think that is one of the biggest things that I took from the military.
And I'm sure it helps you every day since.
Yeah, it does. I'm much more, God, it's weird to even like utter these words. I'm a lot more mature than I was back then. But yeah, it is every day. It's navigating personalities. That's one of the things we do every day.
What do we all need to remember on Memorial Day?
That's a hard question for me to answer. Because, I mean, I joined the Marine Corps. My dad was a Marine, so, like, at that time, I would not have joined any other service. Like, I wanted to be a Marine, like that. But, you know, I very much kept the political aspect out of this book because it was not the point of the book. So Memorial Days is just, remember the military veterans. Remember the people that died, because a lot of these wars we really had no business fighting, in my opinion now. And that may be an unpopular opinion with some of my peers. But if you go and look at the reasons why we were in most of them since World War II, so in a way it kind of feels like being bamboozled sometimes. But at the same time, I still have a very strong spirit of patriotism and love for the military and the Marine Corps and the Army and the other branches as well. So, and a strong love of those who have served. So it's kind of that weird juxtaposition of like that nationalism and that patriotism, but also like being able to see it for what it is sometimes. The reasons we are sent there, because the people that do serve do so out of a spirit of service that a lot of other people don't do in the United States. So I do believe that deserves to be memorialized.
And I have one last question, which is a question that I ask all my guests who teach creative writing, and that is, what is the most important thing you teach your students? If there is one thing you want them to remember from you or your workshop, what is it?
It's the easiest thing. You do not need a degree to be a poet. And I have a degree now in creative writing in English, a bachelor's degree, but poetry was the writing. I wanted to get better at writing. That's why I pursued the degree. So, yes, I need to work on the craft. But there, you know, my sister reached out to me during this, and she was just very inspiring, because she was scared, frightened to share hers because maybe she didn't have enough education. I was like, "Are you writing poetry? Yes, then you're a poet." Now, do I need to work on the craft to become? Absolutely. I mean, but
don't we all though?
Yeah. Like, but. Write, just write. You don't need a degree, you don't need an MFA, you don't need to be rich, it doesn't matter. It's like, write what comes to you. And that's like you've told me and millions of others, nobody can tell your story. I have similar stories to other veterans too, so I mean, that can help other people, but they'll never tell it in my voice the way that I tell it. So don't be afraid to write.
I appreciate that answer, and I would like us to finish this interview by you reading the last poem in this book.
This is more like a poetic rant, but I definitely could not end this book on a suicidal ideation. That, to me, would have been kind of unconscionable. So this poem is titled, Not My Final Message. Garbage on the side of the road will explode. Everyone in the grocery store is a threat. Your children unsuspectedly jumping on your back is a calculated attack. It only takes someone to disagree with you over the simplest thing for you to lose your shit. Your family walks on eggshells and you know it. On a daily basis, ending it all isn't such a bad idea. Besides, you think your absence is better for everyone. But you can't. You won't. For some reason that eludes you now, you just won't. Your children need a father or a mother. Your family needs a son or a daughter or a sister or a brother. Your friends need a friend, and you need a you. Other vets tell you the VA is full of shit and incompetent, but deep down you know better. There is, you have, hope of a different life. A life where you don't believe your trauma makes you interesting. A life where you don't feel like a corpse every day. A life, dare you say, that might inspire. It starts with one step. An email or a phone call saying, you're ready, you need help. Then show up. No matter how uncomfortable it is, no matter how much it hurts, no matter how much you try to convince yourself that it's really not that bad, or what's the use anyhow, never stop showing up.
Thank you so much. I appreciate you coming on Accents.
Thank you, and it was a pleasure to be here.